Philip II of Macedonia. Philip attacks Amphipolis. Part 1. Early in 357 BCE, Philip went to war again, this time as the aggressor. His enemy was Amphipolis, and he claimed that the people there were ill-disposed towards him and offered many pretexts for war. 2 years earlier, he had withdrawn the soldiers stationed in the city, a measure that can only have been damaged the standing of any factions favorable to Macedonia. Most likely, others had risen in prominence who had no reason to feel affection towards him. At the same time, Philip had assured Athens that he had no interest in Amphipolis. Thus, the change was drastic and transparently self-interested, and supposed provocation, a cynical excuse for war. Amphipolis did not possess a large army and relied on its very strong natural and man-made defenses. In the past, this had been proved efficient for the city to maintain its independence from every opponent. The Spartan Brasidius was admitted as an ally, not an overlord, during the Peloponnesian War. But repeated sieges by the Athenians had all ended in failure. With good access to the sea as well as rivers and land, the city was difficult to blockade, especially for an Athenian expedition operating a long way from home. Greek history up to this point suggested that a city this size and strength could only be captured by treachery from within or a blockade lasting years. Philip had other ideas. He had a large army and Amphipolis not far from home, which made supplying his men far easier than it was in the past for Athenian expeditions that had to bring everything in by sea. Rather than adopting the standard approach of blockading the city, which took a long time and even then might not be successful, he opted for a direct assault. This meant either climbing the city walls by ladders or some other means, knocking a hole in them so that the rubble formed a ramp that the men could scramble up, or undermining the fortifications to make them collapse. The last option required suitable geology and skill in military mining. That, at this stage, no one in Greece possessed, including Philip. Assaults were rare unless the city was small and had weak fortifications, for the polis balked at the probable heavy casualties and the high risk of failure in escalating a high wall defended by determined men. Although simple catapults were well known and widely used in defense, no one so far had developed an artillery capable of knocking a hole in a well-built city wall. During the course of his reign, Philip would recruit a large corps of engineers and technical experts. Many were from outside Macedonia and drawn to the king because he paid them well. Amphipolis was his first siege, and already there were signs of an army learning how to deal with fortifications. Diodorus tells us that Philip brought siege engines against the wall, although he does not describe them. He does mention battering rams, quite possibly on wheels and protected by solid roofs, and there were probably mobile sheds to shelter pioneers as they came up to the walls and tried to pry out the stones using crowbars and other tools. Perhaps the attackers also built towers to allow them to shoot down onto the walls, although as yet they may not have possessed the skill to make a mobile siege tower able to roll up to the defense. Amphipolis was sheltered by the river, which can only have reduced the sections of the wall that the Macedonians could readily reach. That made it easier for the defenders to concentrate their strength to meet each attack, which in turn meant Philip's men had to do everything possible to suppress them. Archers and slingers shot missiles at anyone visible on the battlements, as did catapults shooting both sharp bolts and stones. Ideally, all these operated from within shelters that protected them as much as possible from the defenders' missiles. It took some time to construct the siege works needed to bring rams and other things up to the walls and provide cover for them and supporting troops, although far less time than was required to mount a blockade. It also required a large and willing labor force directed by skilled engineers, and here Philip's Macedonians proved themselves willing workmen. At every stage, the defenders did their best to hinder and delay the attackers, although in this case, they can have no experience of dealing with such aggressive besiegers. Apart from throwing and shooting missiles, they could sally out to burn the siege engines and kill the men operating them. This meant that both day and night formed body of Macedonians needed to be stationed close enough to meet any sudden sortie. In turn, Philip's men launched severe and continuous assaults to wear down the defenders and keep them busy, too busy to counterattack. This meant maintaining a deluge of missiles to make it dangerous to be on the battlements and attacks by parties of men with ladders. This sort of fighting is hard on both sides, and such a siege became a test of endurance, willpower, and logistics. We'll pick up there next time. Now, the sources for this: The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.